All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is podcast number 46, and I've got two great stats for 46. First, 46 teams from Europe competed for spots in this summer's Women's World Cup. That's an all-time high for UEFA. And April Heinrichs, captain of the 1991 Women's World Cup team, coach of the 2003 U.S. Women's World Cup team, and current technical director for U.S. Soccer's women's program, she earned 46 caps for the USA, scoring 35 goals. Don't forget you can follow Mix Zone on Twitter. That's M-I-X-X-E-D Zone on Twitter. You can subscribe via iTunes, Podomatic, or check it out at howlermagazine.com. If you're looking for us on iTunes, it's under the Howler Magazine podcast family. And be sure to check out keepernotes.com if you want to listen to the older versions of the podcast, as well as see the daily Countdown to Canada Women's World Cup trivia. So I've got three guests today. First, I spoke with Howler Magazine contributor Evan Davis about Abby Wambach's announcement last week that she would be stepping away from NWSL this season to concentrate on the Women's World Cup. Look for an article from Davis about this issue sometime this week on howlermagazine.com. I also chatted with Sarah Gerke about WOSO and social media. Gerke is now a social media consultant for the Washington Spirit, and it must be said that all opinions expressed in her interview are hers and not necessarily those of the Spirit. Last, I finally had a chance to sit down with Irish international Stephanie Roach as she joined the Dash preseason camp last week. And in true Keeper Notes fashion, I had to give her a little trivia quiz at the end of the interview. So, enjoy. All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with Evan Davis, a contributor for Howler Magazine. And even though Abby Wambach has recently broken his heart, he still agreed to talk with us today. So, Evan, let's talk about what's happened in the last week with Abby Wambach and NWSL.
Yeah, first of all, I am thrilled and honored to be here, Jen. loyal fan, longtime listener, first-time caller. This is great.
Nice. Talk more about the journey that we've all taken with Abby's decisions maybe over the last 6 months and how her role has changed with the U.S. national team.
Yeah, well, I think that Abby Wambach, without question, is this team's talisman and has been for years. What's been really interesting is that she's 34 years old now, and as a forward target striker, that's going to take a lot of physical energy in order to maintain the type of performance levels that she's expected of herself and of what her fans have expected of her. I think it's been surprising to a lot of people who follow the national team pretty closely how much playing time she's still gotten. We saw in the CONCACAF World Championship, she started, I think, three of those five games and came off the bench once. In the Algarve Cup a couple of weeks ago, she still started a couple of games. And what's always kind of been really fascinating to me is that if there's one area on the national team where there's no risk of us having a lack of depth, it's our forward line. With Sydney LaRue, with Crystal Press, Amy Rodriguez, Alex Morgan, this is not an area where we're starving for talent. So the idea that someone who's going to turn 35 during the Canadian in June is still somehow leading the forward line, I think it's a little surprising, especially when you see that she really has lost quite a bit of her pace, some of her finishing ability, and pretty much she's only scoring on headers now. You know, and that speaks to a great deal of what, you know, the cultural environment of what the U.S. women's national team is. I actually did a couple of things just to run some numbers. Wambach, in this past World Cup cycle, since Germany in 2011, mm-hmm. leading into Canada, is facing a potential number of 79 caps for the women's national team. You take a comparable player on the men's side, somebody like Clint Dempsey, he's only been capped about 35 to 40 times between the 2010 and 2014 World Cup cycles. By comparison, Wambach has only made about 30 to 35 club appearances, whereas Dempsey's made 125 for Fulham, Tottenham, and the Seattle Sounders. Now, there are obvious caveats to that with, you know, the Women's League having a shorter season.
Right.
Obviously, there wasn't a league in 2012. But at the same time, that really suggests and as we've all known, people who follow this team, is that for many of these older players, the women's national team is their first club.
Right.
And whatever team they might be playing for with the WPS or with the NWSL is a secondary consideration. A situation like we found ourselves in last week with her announcing that she was going to step away from the Western New York Flash to focus solely on the national team in preparations for the World Cup is a very unique event that I think one would only ever find in the U.S. women's setup. I don't think you'd find it in Europe on either side of the gender aisle. You certainly would never find it in a men's setup. So I think that's what has really kind of caught a lot of people off guard, that her primary argument is that she wants to take care of her body, focus on winning the World Cup, and kind of wind her career down, which are all very legitimate arguments to make if you wanted to retire from the national team or if you wanted to just retire outright. But I think we're all taken a little bit aback that she's been allowed to put the national team kind of on the front foot and let her club performance slide back. But that is so built into how U.S. soccer kind of operates and approaches the women's game.
Right. It was interesting. When I first heard the news, I wasn't too surprised and I wasn't too upset because it's like, yeah, she is getting older. And I always like to add the caveat that it's not the age, it's the mileage. You know,
yeah,
the, especially the way she plays and the number of caps that she plays. I think she's getting pretty close to catching a Joy Fawcett to be third on the all-time list or fourth on the all-time list. But that the more I thought about it, one, that the timing is a problem, that you've basically screwed Western New York Flash, that clearly this is something she had been discussing with Sunil and Jill Ellis way before the draft, and they weren't told until after the draft. You know, so they couldn't draft according to not having that striker. That she was put on the allocated list for this team, and so that's a roster spot. Okay, great. She's freed up a roster spot, but the roster spot she's freeing up is now something that New York has to pay for, where before, you know, obviously her salary was paid for by U.S. Soccer, where you've put this club in a very tenuous position. And then when I read some of her comments to Grant Wall, where it was less about, well, I want to win the World Cup and I want to take care of my body. And she started throwing in other things like, well, you know, I've done my part for the league. I don't, you know, I shouldn't have to take one for the team all the time. And I got married and I want to be with my wife and I want to be in Portland and it's hard. It's like, I'm sorry. That's part and parcel of being a professional athlete. You know, I know there's a lot of fangirls out there that aren't necessarily going to agree with me. You know, but I just feel like it's like, yeah, I look at Landon and I don't always want to make a comparison to men's soccer in a situation like this. But, you know, we saw the toll it took on Landon, but he didn't expect anyone to pay him once he was no longer willing to do what it took. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah. And certainly credits Landon Donovan for taking full responsibility for the decisions that he's made. Yeah, I mean, once again, you see just how complicated it can get when a national soccer federation is the primary financial supporter of a pro club league, especially since your star player, you know, decides that she has a little bit more clout and power than maybe some other players on that team.
Right.
And also beyond the league. Generally, yeah, I think Aaron Lyons is completely correct when he gave his interview to ESPNW and says, you know, this is more or less the club-country relationship has been completely reversed. And if you're not going to play for your country, if you're not going to play for your club, you shouldn't be able to play for your country. And why she thinks that she's able to announce that after the NWSL draft and kind of leave Aaron Lyons hanging is a little perplexing. And, you know, quite frankly, you do still kind of owe the league something, don't you? I mean, as you say, you're a professional athlete. You should be treating yourself, and you should be treating the league with as much respect as anyone else would be expected of. So it's really, really, it's just really, really strange why this has to happen now.
Well, and it also makes me think of some of the things that went down the last season of WPS and shortly after, the way she would continue to defend Dan Borislow. You know, that I mean, without getting into a whole explanation of Magic Jack and the last year of WPS, you know, people just Google
it. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, just people Google it if you don't know what we're talking about. I feel like she had already moved on from caring about the best interests of the league. And, of course, that was a league that was not run by U.S. Soccer, you know, where, you know, she and even Hope Solo would defend. It's like, oh, Dan's great. Dan's wonderful. It's like, but here was someone who was not even paying a trainer. So they always had to, like, get taped up by the trainer from the opposing team. No website, no phone, no coach. Abby was coach. He refused to pay any of his bills to the league. You know, though, of course, he paid the players really well. So I feel like that was the beginning of, you know, maybe she was getting the wrong message from, you know, a big sugar daddy with deep pockets, that it's like, you don't need these other things because you have this. And in no way do I want to take away from all her amazing accomplishments. And in no way would I not want her to be some part, you know, of this summer, because I feel like, you know, even if she's on the bench, she's someone who's probably such an emotional strength and a great leader, you know, and we've seen that before. I remember very clearly the 2000 Olympics, Carla Overbeck, who had been the captain, had played every minute of the 99 World Cup, who had converted that first penalty kick and, you know, was just so fierce. She had lost her starting role. She was diagnosed with Graves' disease and had hurt her knee, but she was still on that roster. And she was someone who was always, you know, the leader from the bench, the toughest person in practice, kind of, and I think that's a role. But all that being said, it's like I have a problem with someone being treated with such kid gloves, especially when you think of last year and Landon not making the World Cup roster, and you can see it's like it's such extremes. But it's like, but that's how professional sports, both club and country, need to be run.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a great point to make about Abby leading from the bench. Kevin Baxter, reporter for the LA Times, did an interview on the Women's World Football Show last week and brought up that exact point, you know, that she is someone who tends to take charge in the locker room at halftime. She's someone who is a motivator, who is definitely, you know, work when Christy Rampone isn't in the lineup is very much a deserved captain of this team.
Right.
But, you know, when, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, this is almost inevitable, just based on how Sunil Gulati and April Heinrichs, and also the media and generalized culture of U.S. soccer and the women's game has placed the U.S. women's national team in such premium, which in a way was kind of unavoidable because we had a national team before we ever had a pro league.
Right.
And so what you automatically assume then is that the most value that a player can see in themselves is by being on the national team. Whether that's right or whether that's wrong, I mean, I'm of the opinion that it's wrong, you have to recognize that there were these structures in place that allow for, especially a certain generation of people. It's very interesting that Wambach, and, you know, we often hear rumors sometimes that it's not just Wambach who kind of looks down on the NWSL among the national team player pool.
Right.
To what degree that's true and what degree that's not true, who's to say? It's all speculative. But it's very interesting that she's kind of part of this generation that, you know, came of age in that 2003 to 2009 zone when there was no league.
Right.
And her primary source of financial income, her primary source of playing time, all came from the national team, didn't come from a club. Mia Hamm and the 99ers got to have this great moment where they got to see out their careers playing professionally in the U.S., and then a lot of these younger players are coming through either the WPS or now through the NWSL, so it's becoming more normative. But people like Wambach, people like Carly Lloyd, maybe people like Shannon Box a little bit, you know, these players who are like in their mid-30s didn't necessarily go over to Europe and play for club teams over there.
Right.
You know, their bread and butter, their livelihood, their identity is wrapped up with the women's national team. So from their perspective, you know, that is their first priority. That is what they have to focus on. And when their bodies are breaking down at the age of 34, it's almost like a no-brainer. You know, all of her arguments that she raised, as I said earlier, make total sense from someone who just wanted to retire.
Right.
Or like Tim Howard last year saying, you know what, I need to take a break from the national team.
Right.
Because I'm getting a little bit older and I want to focus on Everton. But, you know, it's not the same attitude with Abby. And it's frustrating and it's very disappointing. And you almost kind of wish she just retired and then took like an assistant job with the national team to be one of those leaders from the World Cup.
Right.
Or just dedicate herself to being a super sub, as something I said in my article. You know, we saw how explosive she can be when she's in the last 20 or 25 minutes of a game.
Right.
She brings that physicality. She brings that athleticism. She brings that focus, that motivation. If we're tied and we need to unlock a game, or if we're chasing a game and we're down a goal, she is the perfect person to come off the bench in that 65th, 70th minute.
And no opposing team wants to see her come off the bench.
Right, and we're kind of starting to understand that maybe that's not what Jill Ellis, Sunil Gulati, and April Heinrichs' desire is, and maybe not even Abby's desire.
Yeah.
You know, Abby sells tickets. Abby is the face of the organization. She, is going to earn so much endorsement money from being a member of the national team. There's a lot of financial, there's a lot of money at stake in making sure that she stays involved. And, you know, it's always really funny to see how U.S. soccer claims that the NWSL is this tool to keep the national team competitive on a global stage. But time and time again, we see that it becomes a secondary interest. And this is just another example of that.
Yeah, and unlike WSA and WPS, where you saw players come out of those leagues and get caps who had never been capped before, we saw a bit of that in 2013, but as soon as Sirmani was let go and Ellis came in, you know, she's given a first cap only to Ali Long and Alyssa Nair. And Ali Long had been in camp before. Alyssa Nair will be third keeper at best. Long is no longer in the picture. So it's like we know who her 25 are. She's only going to have to cut two for this summer. You're allowed 35 for your provisional roster. So who are those other 10 players going to be, you know, player to be named later, you know?
Right. It doesn't seem to matter because, again, in the mind of U.S. soccer, the national team is the club.
Right.
So, you know, in a world where you would never think that a player pool 2 months, let's be honest, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months before a World Cup could be so solidified.
Right.
And yet here we are, you know, facing that exact situation. And, you know, it, again, just speaks over and over again how weird a relationship the NWSL is ultimately having with U.S. soccer, with players like Amber Brooks and Sarah Hagen basically being told outright, if you don't play in the NWSL, you'll never get a cap. Here we are, not seeing them get capped at all. Abby being able to walk away. It's just perplexing. Like, what do you really want to get out of the NWSL? Is it really just an option for kids coming out of college to make $10,000 or $15,000 over a 6 month season just to retire at the age of 24 or 25?
If that, I mean, really, most of them are lucky. Sorry, most of them are lucky to get five digits.
Exactly my point. You know, it's just so strange. You really want our team to be the best in the world. And God knows we've been talking over and over and over again how, you know, that cliche of the world has caught up. Frankly, if you want my opinion, I think the world caught up a little while ago. But at the same time, you know, we thought, you know, this league was going to address the problems that we saw after 2011. And once again, you know, Erica Timrak is left in the lurch, just to name yet another example. I'm disappointed, and I also don't think, I think Jill Ellis gets pegged with this a lot. I think she's scapegoated a great deal for creating these problems, and sure, Sirmani capped a lot more young players than Ellis has, mm-hmm. but I think these issues are above the coach's pay grade. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that's firmly entrenched with April Heinrichs as technical director. I think that Sunil Gulati is someone who recognizes that the way that, you know, the women's game makes money is through the national team. So, and not on, once again, this group of older players who recognize that it's the national team that makes money. So, again, the rumors, the behind-the-scenes discussions of, you know, Abby being the one to lead for Sirmani's ouster because, you know, he didn't want to give these older players minutes. You know, the players recognize that it's through the national team where they're going to make their bucks. So they also are a force to keep this player pool very, very closed off. I mean, regardless, after Canada, after 2015, no matter what happens, whether we win it, whether we, you know, lose on penalties in the final, whether we crash out in the quarterfinals, I think the player pool is about to get blown up in a very, very big way. It's unavoidable. I think Abby may get a run at the Olympics, you know, but at the same time, Shannon Box is 37, Chrissy Rampone's going to be 40 this summer, Carly Lloyd ain't getting any younger either. Like, there's a lot of room at the top to be cleared away, and I think a lot of players recognize this is their last chance. So, you know, I think we can kind of take Jill Ellis to task, and rightly so in a lot of ways, but I think the natural order of things is going to clear away a lot of these older players after Canada.
Though in your list of four players there, I would say that Carly Lloyd has outperformed the other three by far. I mean, she's the leading scorer.
Oh, unquestionably. I mean, she's the engine of the team, and you know, credit to her for being so solid. I mean, she's turning into that new kind of like motivator, leader of that team.
Right.
And she's so much fun to watch. There's no question about that. But I think she's aware that this is probably her last game.
Right,
World Cup,
right. And she's probably ready, as a lot of the players are. It's like, you know, it'd be nice to have a life where I'm not traveling 200 days a year.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, you know, you got to credit Wombach for being honest about, yeah, I'm 34. I do want to start a family.
I have a house in Portland, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just I wish that she would have been honest and honorable enough to say, well, what that means is I got to step away from playing altogether, or at least from the national.
Or tell the Flash before they come out with the allocated player list and before the draft. You know,
yeah.
I guess I'd feel better if maybe the announcement came from her and Jill jointly, or her and U.S. Soccer jointly, saying it's like, we've done this exception for this player because of this reason. So,
right.
so maybe it makes Abby seem a little less selfish. I was a little surprised when I read that, you know, Aaron Lyons had tried to negotiate with her that they actually had some West Coast games early in their schedule, saying, fine, just you stay in Portland and just meet us there. And she didn't even want to do that. So,
right.
And then I do want to bring up. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, please.
I do want to bring up, there's still that underlying issue that doesn't get talked about a lot, but I think more and more of us are becoming aware of that. You know, Rochester is not a preferred destination for a lot of these players. You know, they've got a hard turf field for both games and practice. You know, so I know that, you know, that's probably taken a toll, you know, on Abby. And we've seen a lot of change in that franchise. I also think it's strange, and I'm not trying to judge, but I think it's strange that, you know, the owner's daughter is, you know, is on the roster, and then she ends up marrying the coach, and now she doesn't play anymore because she had his baby, and,
right.
now she's president. So it's just like, as an outsider with no direct knowledge, I'm just going to say that seems like a strange franchise to me.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is not a vacation destination for anybody in the United States, regardless of whether you're a professional women's soccer player. But I also wonder that, you know, at this point, do they even have any allocated players on their roster? I can't think of any.
Whitney
Engen.
Carly
Lloyd has joined you in Houston.
Whitney Engen. She's the only one.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a young squad, which is something we've been talking about a lot over the last few months. All these trades, these fire sales.
Yeah.
Dominating the NWSL draft. I think that Aaron Lyons, you know, to his credit, is recognizing that, you know, national teamers are not going to be coming to him.
Right.
So he needs to kind of build from the ground up, which is a great opportunity, actually. I mean, to inject youth into a system that he specifically wants to play. And I think, I can't recall who said this, but someone suggested that Wombach not being there might actually be kind of a blessing for the Flash, only in the sense that when Wombach is on the field for the Flash or for the national team, your style of play becomes pretty specific.
Right.
You know, it's very direct, it's very physical, a lot of long balls, a lot of getting the ball out wide, booting it in, trying to see if you can latch something onto her head. You know, Lines doesn't necessarily have to play that kind of system anymore.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of young blood where he can mold something into, maybe he wants to, you know, start shaping Whitney Ingen into a center back who can play out of the back. You know, start building up maybe more of a possession-based style. I mean, Laura Harvey, you know, shows how that can work in the women's game, and I think turned a lot of heads when she was at the NSCAA conference and her discussion of how you can use a playing out of the back possession style for a young team. I mean, this could be a really, really interesting moment for how the Flash move forward. I mean, completely frustrating, and I can understand why Lines feels disrespected, but, you know, if there's any silver lining in it, it means he now has a lot more options for the type of system he wants to implement up in Rochester.
Well, and he picked up great talent in the draft. I mean, he had 4 picks in the first round. So, and I know he was even getting teased on one of the coaching panels that I think at the time his roster was like 12 people.
I know, right?
Because the Washington Spirit was talking about that they were doing a sponsor a team program in their community, and someone said, maybe you need to sponsor Western New York Flash, which I thought was thought was kind of cute. But so it's going to be really interesting to see how all of this plays out. And one of the points I want to throw in there is that we're just at such an interesting time in the development of women's soccer, not only in this country, but worldwide, where, like, you know, Cheryl Bailey, the previous NWSL director, she went to a conference, a FIFA conference in Switzerland, when they had all different representatives from the different women's leagues around the world, because they're trying to come up with a common calendar. Because
right.
I think they're acknowledging that it's like, it doesn't make sense for the women to follow the men's calendar, because it's based on, you know, the men's qualifying schedule, and that you've had all these leagues that have popped up in different countries doing their own thing. And it's fascinating how you have this great kind of schedule between the U.S. and Australia, that the NWSL players can just leave as soon as the season's over, and then they pick up the Australian season, you know, and then how everyone has kind of set aside March for Algarve, Cyprus, and now the Istria Cup. So it's, we're just at a great point in the development of the sport, and also in, like, are we in this country in terms of taking it to more professional level, that, you know, I want to see more coverage of what Abby's doing being analyzed and possibly criticized without the, but she's our hero. It's like, yeah, but this is a professional sport and it's our national team, and let's talk about this from both sides. So I just, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens.
Absolutely. I mean, this season is going to be interesting for so many reasons, for all the storylines that we all know about, with it being the third year, the World Cup interruption, you know, how teams are going to be able to cope with all of their national teamers gone. It's a great point to raise about trying to get on a coordinated season for all the women's leagues. I mean, I remember Jessica Fishlock was mentioning how she didn't quite know how it was going to work with the NWSL season stretching into September when you missed the transfer window.
Right.
So many players, actually quite tidily, Fishlock included, were able to play all throughout the spring and summer with the NWSL, and then immediately move over to Europe when their season starts right before the transfer window ended. It's going to be a little bit trickier this time around. And as we've also seen how many players end up jumping into the NWSL mid-season because they're trying to fill out their European obligations, to be able to get a system when everybody might be able to start and end the same season at the same time, I think would be such a boon, because if there's anything that's going to develop the women's game faster, it's just continual playing time and making sure that players are able to get those 9 months of football every single year.
And then that big question mark. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was also just going to say, also to the point of the media, you know, credit to ESPNW for running, you know, an article that's not necessarily going to be top to bottom a defense of what Wambach is doing, you know. I think if there's anything that's going to make this sport even more credible in the United States, is to actually have a mix of high-profile media asking the type of hard questions that need to be asked of the league
right,
and of the national team.
Right.
Because so often, how often do we see coverage from Sports Illustrated, ESPNW, other big outlets just kind of brushing things aside unless it's Han Solo drunkenly running at a policeman. So all of this suggests that we're at a critical moment for the women's game and a very exciting moment for the women's game, and I absolutely cannot wait for the World Cup this summer.
Well, and how much would you pay to have access to a private meeting with the 99ers about what's going on right now?
Well, that's very interesting because Michelle Akers, as we know, has been speaking pretty critically of how U.S. soccer is handling the, representation of the 99ers within the U.S. soccer community. But then on the other side of it, you have somebody like Julie Foudy, who, has come to, Jill Ellis' defense a lot, has come to the national team's defense, critical when she needs to be, because she is a member of the media. But it's an interesting kind of mix as to see who's speaking up, who's fading in the shadows. I don't fully agree necessarily with Akers' position. I understand why she thinks that he should have a place in the setup somehow. But also just because you won a World Cup doesn't mean that you get to be an assistant coach or some type of front office representative.
Right. Same as Abby, just because you're the all-time leading scorer, internationally doesn't mean you automatically get whatever.
There you go. Yeah. That's a great
and
point.
Speaking of Akers, I remember, she retired very suddenly, about a month before they kicked off their first game in the 2000 Olympics. It was
That's
the kind
right.
of thing, like, she had come back from shoulder surgery and a minor knee ailment, and I think it just got to the point where it's like, her body just can't hold up. Now, there could have been something behind the scenes that we're not aware of. Hope Solo intimated in her book that she was pushed out, but it's like, it's the same thing. I now remember that feeling as a fan going, oh my God, how are we going to survive the Olympics without Michelle Akers? But it's like, no player can be just one team. I'm sorry, no team can be made of just, one player.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in U.S. soccer is a continual mystery, I think, to all of us, as to how they operate. And, we're left to speculate with a lot of things. But I think that it would be great for Michelle Akers to at least provide some type of advisory position for the team. And, the future of Abby Wambach playing, I mean, she wants to play in the Olympics. Let's see what happens. I mean, I guess that's all you can really say. I mean, she'll be 36 by the time the team goes to Brazil. So, fair play to her if she thinks she can make it happen. But I know that she also wants to play a season for a European club leading up to that. So that would, get her off the hook, I think, a little bit for what has been going on right now. But
of course, I don't know how she'd be able to do that since New York Flash holds her ITC. She can't.
I mean, it's all speculation. But
yeah.
As we've kind of seen, Abby kind of gets to do what Abby wants.
Yeah.
So anything is possible at this point.
Well, hopefully the Flash, if that happened, the Flash would be able to say whatever club wanted to sign her. Said, sure, she's yours. You owe us $20,000. Think about it. Have we ever had a transfer fee of an American female player to a European club?
I'm aware of.
Yeah, like you said, it's a fascinating time in women's soccer. And of course, you and I could talk about this for another 3 hours, but I don't think I could put up a 3-hour podcast. But Evan, thank you so much for chatting today. And we will definitely chat again before the World Cup and probably during the World Cup and probably after the World Cup.
And thank you so much, Jen.
And you have an article coming out on Howler today. Yes.
Yes, sometime this week. So everybody go to howlermagazine.com and check that out.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Thanks, Jen.
All right. Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with Sarah Gerke from, of course, Twitter, but also from Washington Spirit. Sarah, you've got a new role with the Washington Spirit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I went from writing for various places, the Soccer Wire, the Soccer Desk, to helping out the Spirit on the social media side and on the media side.
And I want to talk specifically about social media. I think, you know, it just goes hand in hand with the development of women's soccer. You know, as we saw with WPS, they were an early adopter of Twitter and other social media outlets to much success, I believe. I remember looking up the numbers about 5 years ago, and at the time, WPS had their own, the league Twitter feed had 200,000 followers, and at MLS had 20,000 followers. Of course, that's not true today, but, you know, I just think it was really smart of women's soccer to go, hey, here's a way to reach fans that's, you know, very affordable and very direct. But let's talk about the impact of that and how it makes women's soccer a little bit different than, say, you know, NBA tweeting or NFL tweeting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that social media is a low-cost, low-investment way to really reach directly to your fans in a very, I think, genuine and high-touch, right, way. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for more kind of alternative sports, because it's not just women's soccer where social media is really important. You know, American soccer or soccer in the United States is also a lot of that conversation and a lot of that promotion and a lot of, you know, that conversation takes place on Twitter, and women's soccer certainly fits into that. What I think is really interesting about the women's soccer side is, because it's obviously still small, it has a different feel than, you know, LeBron James or Wayne Rooney or, you know, these megastars who are on Twitter. And, you know, more than likely they have some social media manager or their talent agency probably controlling what they're tweeting. And it's not really a way that you get to know that player. Whereas, you know, for a lot of these players in the NWSL, even on the U.S. Women's National Team, you know, they're generally tweeting their own thoughts. They're, you know, talking about watching El Clasico, or they're giving an update on, you know, taking an ice bath. And that level of familiarity and that level of connectedness with the fans is one aspect that, you know, makes women's soccer, I think, really attractive to new fans, in that, you know, you feel like you're following and supporting real people, not these, like, untouchable icons. And I think that's pretty central to any minor league or you know, women's sport in the United States. So I think that it's really important to the growth of the sport.
Yeah, and when you follow one of these players, you know, you don't feel like you're one of millions following. You feel like that there's a chance that, you know, hey, she might see my tweet about this. She might even reply to my tweet. Like, I mean, I saw Carly Lloyd tweet about how long it was taking to get her baggage at the Philly airport, and having had a very similar experience there in January, I was like, I feel you. It took me 10 hours to get a bag, you know, and she actually replied to that. It's just, you know, funny that, like you said, there's not some management team behind the scenes taking care of that Twitter account. It's actually, you know, the person tweeting. Now, you know, what would you have some examples of, you know, the good things the teams can do, the clubs can do, to connect to their fans and maybe, you know, increase following and increase sales?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's always been interesting about specifically women's soccer in the United States is oftentimes personalities or players or narratives have, like, hit the mainstream a lot more than the particulars of, you know, the league or when games are played, or something that's, you know, more for a hardcore fan. So a great example is Stephanie Roche for Houston Dash, right?
Right.
So the fact that, you know, the Dash can be retweeting what she's tweeting or be a part of the Dash's social media presence, she at this point is, for the general public, known for that one goal. But that can be mutually beneficial for both, you know, Stephanie and the Dash, in that they are probably going to get a lot more followers, or at least kind of get into the awareness of these, you know, probably casual soccer fans who saw her amazing goal and started following her. So the fact that oftentimes, you know, the number of followers that these players have, or just casual fans that know of them, you know, are going to be seeking out, oh, where did she go? Is she playing club soccer? Oh, you know, anytime you can kind of have that cross-pollination of mm-hmm. fans is really important. And I think that's what Stephanie can do for the Dash, but also, you know, what the NWSL is really hoping for with a World Cup, which is, you know, it's not just that one-time goal that got her nominated for the Puskás Award. You know, you can go see her on a weekly basis. You can see high-level soccer, you know, in your community. It's not just happening in Canada. It's not just happening at the international level.
So and I you think, can see it on YouTube.
Having that crossover is something really important. And a lot of players, you know, do a fantastic job of, you know, promoting their clubs, even when they're not with them. I saw a tweet from Alex Morgan, I think last night, you know, wishing her team, the Portland Thorns, good luck against their game with the Pilots. You know, little things like that can go a long way. And I think it's really great to keep the awareness between players and the relationship with their club kind of on the forefront.
And I liked with the what happened with Stephanie Roach, that it means that now basically all of Europe knows what Houston Dash is, and hopefully NWSL as well, where I don't think Ireland or the UK would have had any awareness of NWSL or Houston Dash. And suddenly, you know, she's a social media sensation. Everyone's seen that video. And then there's a huge picture of her wearing a Dash jersey. She gets invited to the White House, et cetera, et cetera. We were hoping that she would get to create another social media stir. We made a Obama 44 jersey for her to take to the White House. Houston Dash, you know, but they had told the Dash that it was going to be, you know, like a meeting with Obama, but actually it was a huge cocktail party of maybe like 500 people. So she didn't really get a chance to like present him the jersey and get a picture taken with it. But thankfully I do have a picture of the jersey. So I'm hoping to use Twitter to, you know, troll Obama enough to get a response.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's another example of how can NWSL, you know, keep their dedicated fan base, but also reach out to that general fan who's going to see things like a visit to the White House by one of the players. You know, I'd love to see the NWSL champions be able to visit the White House like the WPS champions were able to do. So that is another way of, hey, reaching something outside of your dedicated fan base. Because, of course, you want to keep the great fans that you have. But, you know, how do you move outside that bubble? You know, being a person that's pretty active on Twitter, you know, I'm sensitive to the fact, and I fully recognize that, you know, that echo chamber does exist. And while it's really great to have conversations with people who are passionate about the same things you are, something that I think about every day is, you know, how do I move outside that? How do I reach out to people who, you know, maybe are receptive to, you know, supporting a new team or, you know, getting into the NWSL, maybe because they like the national team or they like DC United. You know, how do you reach out to those people? Because if you're really successful in your echo chamber, you're going to be really successful there. And if it doesn't translate, you know, was it really worth it to be successful at all? So I think that's something to, you know, a lot of people are putting a lot of time into thinking about. And, you know, that's going to evolve as the league evolves.
And we've been such kind of a, I don't want to say we're a small fan base, but I would say a very insular fan base. And it's fascinating, the women's soccer community that's online. And, you know, as you and I know, that the friends that you end up making that you don't live anywhere near, but, you know, you have this shared love for WOSO and you end up communicating on Twitter. But I feel like we all become so defensive and protective of women's soccer that there's this us versus them mentality. I feel this with myself a lot, where when the mainstream media kind of swoops in and covers something related to women's soccer, there's a bit of a resentment. It's like, we've been here the whole time. Where were you? You know, but I know I have to be more sensitive to that, where, like you said, it's like we need to be successful beyond the echo chamber.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the other side of that is, okay, you know, something big happened. So fans or the media, you know, got sucked in because of that one like singular event. So I think for clubs, for the league, for passionate fans, you know, how do you reach out to your fellow fans? How do you reach out to media organizations to make sure that drop in, you know, hopefully becomes a little bit more permanent? Okay, you found that one thing really interesting. Let me tell you about these other storylines, or let me show you this game, or let me show you film of this team who plays amazing soccer. Let me show you the facilities up in Maryland where the Spirit play, which are gorgeous. You know, how do you make that more than just something that's passing by, right? So I don't think there's any problem with that, right? It's just, hey, like, let's all think about it together and see what we can do to try to hold on to that fan or hold on to that media organization who, you know, showed interest in something they, you know, maybe haven't recently.
So what kind of plans does the Spirit have for, you know, capturing whatever comes out of the Women's World Cup this summer? You know, the Spirit have both Americans and Canadians on the roster, so you've got, you know, two different national teams that you could, you know, capitalize on their success. So what's going to be the best way to capture whatever momentum comes out of the tournament this summer?
I think one thing that's pretty simple but also pretty crucial is just having really good, quality, interesting content available on social media. So if, you know, people, residents around the DMV area get into the World Cup, are tuning in for these great games that are going to be carried on Fox, and they're like, oh, I see Ashlyn Harris, she plays for actually somewhere, you know, near me, I'm going to check out that team. And if they go onto our Twitter and just see, like, you know, text-only, occasional updates about the team, like, that's probably not going to capture them. If they see vibrant pictures and engaging YouTube videos and promotions for games and, you know, relevant match reports and, you know, things that they can engage with and they become excited when they see that, then I think that's how you translate that person's passing interest of, oh, hey, I'm going to favor that tweet and maybe, you know, go back to a game, or, oh, I see they have a promotion for this game. I'll go check it out, because you have to be there to be able to capture that person. So I think just having really solid, you know, social media presence, because that's probably, you know, part of what's going to explode during the summer, just as during the World Cup, you know, the social media, you know, American soccer world kind of exploded. I think, you know, being able to go about it that way. And then I also think, you know, having that in-person experience with the team. So hosting things like World Cup viewing parties and, you know, letting people see that, you know, there's really high quality soccer here too. And, you know, just like Tim Howard went back to Everton and Michael Bradley went back to Toronto, like, these players are going to be returning to their NWSL clubs in the summer. Like, the high quality, exciting soccer doesn't have to end on July 6th. You know, it goes all the way through September. So I think just making sure that, you know, you're ready for when the attention turns to women's soccer this summer is going to be really important.
I remember in 2011 seeing, you know, such a boost from that Women's World Cup, and I know a lot of the players, their Twitter feeds just exploded, and it was great to see the games in the league after the World Cup, just that boost in attendance. So, it's such an important time to capture.
Now, yeah, and I mean, Fox put together some really amazing features on players. I remember the Kristen Press feature that ran, I can't remember what game it was before, but it really told a really interesting story about her that was engaging, that wasn't just something that was kind of surface level and that you would forget. And that's the type of engagement that you're talking about. And, you know, if Fox is going to keep up that kind of really quality coverage, which, you know, all indications point that they will, I think that this could have a really huge boost for the U.S. Women's National Team, that you're getting to know in a really important way these players, because narratives matter, right? And they're setting up some really good ones that fans can really follow throughout the tournament. So I'm very optimistic and really excited.
All right, so we've talked about social media. That's kind of our core issue. But, of course, there's still the traditional local media outlets. So, you know, what has the Spirit been doing in the D.C., Maryland, you know, Virginia area to get the name out there?
Yeah, so this year we've had some great outreach from local media organizations, and we're obviously try to, you know, be very collaborative with them. And, you know, they're not going to be as maybe as familiar with every one of our players. So, you know, being able to talk with their media contacts and kind of like let them know some players that they may be interested in pitching them stories, you know, that's something that's pretty common. We have a really, I think it's going to be a cool feature on Tori Huster coming up with a local media outlet. They do this promotion kind of every year in the community just surrounding where the Spirit play, the Maryland Soccerplex. And it's kind of called a day in the life. So they, you know, take various citizens around the county and do like little vignettes, like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes about the person and what their life is like in the county. And so, you know, I think Tori's going to be one of the more interesting and fun ones, given that she's a professional athlete. So they came to practice. They actually filmed it with a drone. So I'm really excited to see that footage and what they end up doing with it. She did an interview with them afterward, and then she's going to kind of probably contribute some of her own video of, you know, doing something that she would do typically on any given day. We're trying to connect with, you know, several other local media outlets and really making it very easy for them to understand kind of what we have going on, because obviously they have a lot of content and other competing interests, right? So making sure that we have a clear line of communication with them where they don't have to dig through a roster or dig through anything to be able to find some pretty engaging stories. So really just making that connection and putting that extra effort into trying to establish that relationship, because obviously we're a new league, we're a new team. You know, you have to try to put some effort and really build that, because, you know, obviously it's a mutually beneficial relationship, right? We're getting our story out to the local community and they're getting an interesting, you know, story to air on, you know, their channel or their website. So, you know, really putting some effort into that. We're excited to see what it yields and hopefully making progress and really just raising awareness about the Spirit being in the D.C. area. It's a great soccer market, and we just really want to seize on that.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, D.C. has such a great soccer history and a lot of media outlets and a lot of soccer-specific writers that I know that are based there. So would you say that, in general, the media is very receptive to what you're pitching, especially compared to perhaps, you know, Rochester for the Flash or New Jersey for Sky Blue?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say really receptive, but it's also a very saturated market. I've heard the Chicago Red Stars kind of talk about this a lot, where they're just in a sports saturated market, and it's hard to get the attention of, you know, the copious amount of writers and outlets that exist there. So I think it's about, you know, yes, they're receptive, but you kind of have to get on their radar first. Like, I mean, any fan or person connected with the NWSL knows all too well that a lot of people don't know it exists yet. So, you know, it is a matter of educating in a compelling and clear way and just getting in front of people, because, you know, it's not a problem at all that, you know, they're not aware that the league exists, but it's a problem in the sense that, you know, we want to educate them. We want to let them know it's there. We want to, you know, explain what we have to offer in a really compelling way. So, you know, that's definitely the objective that we have. Obviously, some people have some pretty good awareness about the Washington Freedom, but we want to make sure that they realize that high level of soccer and excitement is still in the community. It's just as Washington Spirit.
Well, Sarah, thanks for talking with us today, and I bet we'll see a lot of great things during the World Cup and after from Washington Spirit.
Thank you very much.
All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper here with Stephanie Roach, the newest Houston Dash player, fresh off a whirlwind tour of, I think, everywhere. Austin, Texas, the White House, the FIFA Gala. It's been a crazy year for you, and I'm not going to rehash all of that because I'm sure you've talked about that a lot. But let's talk about just the last week, your trip to Austin to, was the new opening, the new Irish consulate?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the White House. So talk about that.
Yeah, we traveled down. It was a long drive. It's crazy to believe how big Texas is. We had to leave at 5 a.m. to get down to Austin for the consulate opening. And it was a good day. I got to meet the Taoiseach, which is the Prime Minister of Ireland. Uh-huh. So he was there, and it was just opening the new Irish consulate in Austin. And we spent the day there with a couple of people, a couple of Irish people, and made a few connections through the Irish network here, which is always going to be good, because it's nice to have some Irish friends over here as well. So that was a good day. And then from there we came back, and then almost the next day I think we traveled to, oh sorry, then Monday we traveled to Washington for the White House visit. So it's been, as I said, a crazy few weeks. And obviously before that, with everything else that was going on, I haven't had too much time to put my feet on the ground and just kind of get back into football. So today it was brilliant just to get back and train and get myself settled down. So.
Now, I know you had gone to D.C. with an Obama 44 jersey. Was there an opportunity to give that to him?
Not directly, but I gave it to security, and then I asked for him to call somebody else to make sure he gets it, and they were really, really helpful. They took my email and asked me to email them on, and they're going to send a thank you letter for the gift. So they've been really, they're really good and really helpful, so I'm pretty sure he's going to get it, but we're hoping maybe he'll take a picture and that's how he has actually got it.
Yeah.
So we'll
yeah.
see what happens.
Yeah, Obama, we're waiting to hear if you got that Obama 44 jersey. Any other thoughts about the U.S. so far? Again, we know it's only been a week, but just compared to,
yeah,
you know, being in Europe,
it's different. I really do love America. I've been over here quite a few times before, and on holiday, and we've been all over America. I was in Indiana in a training camp with the Irish team a few years ago, and we played a couple of games. We actually played Notre Dame as well, so we played a few games over here, and I just think the football over here has taken me professionally, and really people are really up for it, and I love to see that. That's the way I am. I want to win, I want to do well, and I really think the right attitude is here in women's football, so I'm happy to be here.
What kind of transition is it going to be for you to transition from playing in the Women's National League in Ireland and the French League to NWSL? How is the play different?
It's a big difference. I think I actually spoke to Randy as well, and he told me a little bit of the difference about it here. I think it's, even from training this morning, it's very hectic. It's like go, 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 go all the time, whereas even people who know me as a player, I'm not a hectic player. I'm actually a very calm player. I don't like to be rushed. I'll rush when I have to rush. But no, there is big differences, in play, particularly from playing in Ireland, because Ireland's only an amateur league. I've played there for the last 4 years. It's in its fourth year, so I played the last 3 years. I played there and then went to France, which is France was a big step up from Ireland as well. But I think even coming here is an even bigger step up. So I'm really looking forward to the challenge. I want to do well, and I think I'll do well being here, and playing in this league will make me a better player. And that will do well for me when I go to play international football as well. So that's my ultimate goal, is just to be a better player.
Now talk about the Women's National League in Ireland. So you said it's in its fourth year, and that was fifth year.
I think it's the fourth year.
Started with I think a grant from UEFA to say, hey, all the federations need to start a women's league. In the first season, your club won the league and qualified for the Champions League. So talk about that.
We won the league and cup double the first year, which is great, because I actually joined the club in order to go to the Champions League the first year, and went to the Champions League with them before the league actually started. They had won the FAI Cup the year before, so I went to the Champions League and we done really well. We were the first ever Irish team to get to the knockout stage, men or women, so it was a huge success and we done really well. And then to come into, as you said, the inaugural league, we won the league then. Won the cup, and then we're going to Champions League again. And I think we didn't do ourselves justice. I think we, considering how well we'd done the year before in the Champions League, we wanted to go one step further and try to get to the quarterfinals if we could. But we got to the group stage and we finished second in the group. It wasn't where we wanted to finish, but as I said, it was a great experience. And I think I scored 4 goals the first year, and I scored 4 the second year as well. So I scored a couple of goals, which is good. And I suppose it's just nice to play different teams from all around the world, so it was a good experience and, again, a good learning curve for me.
Yeah, and you got to travel to, it was like, what, Serbia and Estonia and all over
we played
for those games.
It was Slovenia the first year, and it was
Slovenia.
Sarajevo the second year, Bosnia, so.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was good. It was, as I said, it's different. I mean, football is great like that. It gets you to different places in the world. I mean, you play against different teams that you never think you'd play against, and I mean, we got to play against Costa Rica there when we were in the Istria Cup in Croatia last week, or 2 weeks ago. So it's great to play against different cultures, I suppose, and different footballers from all around the world. So I've been lucky enough to do that.
Well, and to have the satisfaction of beating a team that you know is qualified for the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, that was, obviously I think they have a different route to the World Cup than we do. We like to make ourselves feel better by saying we have a harder route to get there. But they were a good team, and it was great to get a win, because we thought we hadn't done well the games before. We hadn't done ourselves justice, I suppose. We had kind of maybe should have scored a lot more goals and didn't, and I was just happy to get into the game and start and get a goal, as I said, but to win the game was brilliant.
Well, and speaking about a harder path to get to the Women's World Cup, I would definitely agree with that, especially now that Europe lets all countries kind of qualify, where it used to be that there was a top tier of women's teams and a lower tier, and only the top tier could go into qualifying for the Women's World Cup. And now it's, 50-some teams that are qualifying for
there's a lot of teams,
like 7 slots. But I felt like Ireland had a pretty good qualifying campaign, and I'm specifically thinking about the match against Germany, where Ireland goes ahead and then it's down 2-1 and you come in as a sub and score the equalizer. So close. I mean, almost a draw against Germany. Sadly they got a goal in stoppage time, but
it's just like a that game for me destroys football. It's just such a roller coaster. Like, where I was on the bench, obviously I came on last 10 minutes, so we took the lead in the game, we were all so happy, and then we were held out for so long, and they got a dodgy penalty, which we thought shouldn't have been a penalty, and then they got another goal. It was 2-1, wasn't it? Then scored another dodgy goal, they pushed our goalkeeper, and it was just mayhem. And then I came on and we scored, and we just thought, yes, this is it. It was the 89th minute. We're like,
right,
just hold out, we can do this, we can get a great result against Germany, who have been like such unbeatable force in the last few years. So it was just for us for a little country like Ireland to come up against someone like that, and to be getting a draw out of the game was unbelievable. But then a freak goal again. Like, it's like I'm making excuses, but a freak goal again was the wind took the ball over Emma Byrne's head, and it was just devastating to go from such a high to such a low.
Well, and that's why I'm aware of that game, is because when that happened last April, and of course a lot of us here are following European qualifying because of some of the NWSL players,
yeah.
You know, and it's just like Germany eked out a 3-2 win over Ireland.
It's
like it makes you want to go, you know, find the highlights.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, it was
for that game.
Said, it was a great game, but it was just, we're all disappointed we didn't win or didn't get a draw out of the game in the end, because it was just felt horrible to lose the game so late on with such a stupid goal.
Now, Ireland has a friendly coming up in May against the U.S.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S. in San Jose. Are you going to be part of that squad? Or?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. They're playing a game against Spain on the 8th of April, but my manager Sue said that I should just skip it because I'm only after getting here and she wants to settle in. And I think I was happy with that because it's been such a long journey getting here, and then with everything that's been happening this week, I really just wanted to kind of get my head down and start working hard and focusing on my football again. So I was happy that she said that. Not that I want to miss international games, but it's kind of given me a chance to settle in here and just get myself ready and be ready for the Washington Spirit game when we play.
Now, what other schedule does Ireland have? Because Ireland can't qualify for the Olympics, because I know that how UEFA does Olympic qualifying is just, well, you have to get into the World Cup and then it's top players now. So does Ireland have any other games coming up maybe for Euro qualifying?
We just have the two games that are the game we're playing in San Jose against America. I think there could be another game that week, but it hasn't been confirmed just yet, so it might be, I think it's in America against somebody else, I'm not too sure just yet. But after that, then the World Shooting Games is on, the Irish team go to that, so it's not it's not myself, and it'll be University Games it's called. So the Irish manager is the manager of that team as well, so she'll be taking the team there, and then we'll come back in and I think we'll just play friendlies or whatever until the qualifiers. I think the draw is in April for the next qualifier, so we'll prepare ourselves then.
And Euro 2017, it's in the Netherlands, I think.
Yeah, it is.
So we're rooting for you. Cause
that's what we want to do. It's my ultimate goal, is to get to a championship final, whether it be the World Cup or whether it be a European. Obviously, World Cup would be better, but we just missed out on that, so our next hope is to get to Euro 2017.
So during the World Cup this summer, I mean, do you root for someone, or do you just want exciting games, or do you not root for someone and you're just watching great football?
I just like to see exciting games, but obviously being with me playing in America, I'll have an interest in America. I know a couple of the girls here are playing the team, so it'll be something that I suppose I'll be looking to see them do well. I think as well, France haven't played against them with the international team. I think they're going to be an outside team. They could have a chance of winning it as well. I think they play exciting football and they're good to watch. So I think I'll have to go for America being here in America. But as I said, I just want to see good games, and I want to be able to tell friends and family to watch the World Cup and see exactly what women can do with football.
Now, do you think there might be some more Irish players that would follow you to NWSL if this season goes well?
I hope so. I want to, as I said, first and foremost, I want to get into my training schedule here this month before the season starts and just get myself ready and fit and sharp. And hopefully, if I do well, it opens the door for more Irish people to come over, because we have some fantastic footballers in Ireland. It's just, it's more so than being given the opportunity. I've been given a fantastic opportunity by coming here to Houston, and I thank Randy for taking the chance on me, because I know he doesn't know too much about me, but I want to come over here and prove myself and do well, and hopefully, as I said, if I do that, it will open the door for more Irish people to come over.
Did you feel it was meant to be when you heard that he coached the Fighting Irish?
Yeah, I suppose so. No, I think it's crazy the amount of little things that are popping into my head about Texas and Houston and things I was seeing. I just wanted to be here. I think when I was offered to come here, I had been offered clubs in England and in Europe again, but as soon as America was on the card and Houston, I snapped at the chance and I was happy to come here. So as I said, I think he's been really patient with me with everything that's happened the last few weeks. I've had to go off, swung off to the White House for a few days and do other things. So right now I just want to get back into my football and I really want to do well. So I just want to repay everybody here for taking the time and giving me a chance.
Now, one of your Irish teammates, Megan Campbell, she's played at Florida State, won the national championship with Florida State, you know, just in December. What has she told you about playing in the U.S.?
We've actually recently just spoke about it because I signed for Houston Dash, and she just said it's different. It's kind of what I knew. I know from watching American football and from being over here and seeing games that it's more athletic and fit. I think the players are more stronger. It's more tactical, I suppose, in Europe, and that would be more my game. I'm more of a technical player, so that's something that I'm hoping I'll be able to bring to the league. I want to bring a little bit of skill and flair to the game, and I know I'm not the biggest and the strongest player, but hopefully my technical side will win over and I'll do well at that. But she just basically told me that it's all about kind of athleticism. You have to be an athlete to be here, so I'm hoping being here I'll improve myself as an athlete, and that will in turn kind of make me a better player overall.
All right, want to wrap it up. I do this with a lot of my interviews. I ask them some trivia questions, always kind of gear the trivia to their background.
Okay.
So some of these you may know the answer to, maybe not.
I hope so.
So there's only one Irish player who has scored against the U.S. Women's National Team. Do you know who it is?
Olivia O'Toole.
But I think she had the assist on it.
Whoa.
She was the FAI Player of the Year, I think, in maybe 05.
Oh, I don't know.
Michelle O'Brien.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that. Jesus, put me out there.
All right. Who has scored more international goals? Carly Lloyd, who's going to be your teammate on the dash, or Robbie Keane?
Robbie Keane.
Robbie Keane has Lloyd beat by just 2 goals.
Yeah.
He's got 65. She's got 63.
Robbie's a good goal scorer.
Which has more counties, Ireland or Texas?
Texas is a big place. I'm going to say Texas.
Texas.
Yeah.
Texas has 254 counties.
Yeah.
Ireland, even if you're including Northern Ireland, it's 32.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Texas. And here's an easy one for you. Which is better, Guinness or Smithix?
I've never drank either of them, to be honest. So I'm just going to say Guinness because it's the traditional Irish drink.
All right.
And my dad drinks Smithix, so Jesus, it's a hot soap here. I'll say Guinness.
Okay, we'll say Guinness. All right, well, thanks, Steph, and good luck this
thank
season.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, time to wrap it up with the back four. First and foremost, vive la France. FIFA announced last Thursday that the 2019 Women's World Cup will be played in France and on grass. 9 cities will be chosen to host the matches. Right now, there's 11 cities interested. And winning this bid means that France will also host the Under-20 Women's World Cup in 2018. Number 2, Jill Ellis has named the roster for the April 4th friendly in St. Louis versus New Zealand. Same 25 players as the initial Algarve Cup roster. More than 30,000 tickets have been sold for the match. And after that match, the women's players will join their NWSL clubs. Number 3, don't forget, Women's World Cup 100 Days Countdown on Mixzone and KeeperNotes.com. You can follow on Twitter. There's a daily trivia for Countdown to Canada. And then all of the trivia is posted online at KeeperNotes.com. Just look for the 100 Days link. Last, Proactive Tours. They're offering a great Winnipeg package for this summer's Women's World Cup. Includes tickets to 4 matches, basically the first 2 doubleheaders of the USA's group in Winnipeg. 7 days, 6 nights, accommodation at 3 or 4-star hotels, breakfast each day, guided tours, ground transportation, and trip leaders the whole time to make sure that you've got everything you need. So check out proactivesoccertours.com and keep in mind that the first doubleheader is sold out. So that June 8th match, Sweden versus Nigeria, USA versus Australia, it is sold out. So you cannot buy individual tickets, but basically the only way to get tickets now is through special packages like this. So check out proactivesoccertours.com. All right, want to give a back pass to all of you listeners. Let me know what topics you would like featured on the Mix Zone. Just send me an email to keeper@keepernotes.com. Want to get feedback from you. And don't forget, you can subscribe via iTunes. Just search for Howler on iTunes or check out the podcast at howlermagazine.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Mix Zone via iTunes. Just search for Howler. Or you can listen to the podcast at howlermagazine.com or podomatic.com. And shout out, of course, to Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 and PK Ray for making this podcast possible.